97.9 The Hill, WCHL, and UNC School of Media and Journalism present Sports Focus with Charlie Tuggle. Sports Focus, dedicated to in-depth examination of issues of overriding importance in the sports world. Each week, we'll discuss problems and look for solutions in professional, collegiate, and amateur sports. From Carroll Hall on the Carolina campus, here's your host, UNC Journalism Professor Charlie Tuggle.
Welcome to Sports Focus. Our topic today, the Varsity Blues case and other problems plaguing University of Southern California athletics. Our guest, Tim Nevius of the College Athlete Advocacy Initiative. He's located in New York. So, Tim, you used to be an NC2A investigator. Now you're with CAAI. What exactly is CAAI?
Yeah, it's the College Athlete Advocacy Initiative at the Urban Justice Center in here in New York. It's a nonprofit that's focused on advocating for college athlete rights by providing them with legal assistance on individual eligibility cases to protect their athletic, academic, and financial aid opportunities, while also pushing for reform through creative advocacy campaigns.
All right, so the Varsity Blues case, for those who might have forgotten, parents typically were bribing coaches, college coaches, to give athletics scholarships to their kids. Lori Loughlin, Felicity Huffman, two of the more famous actresses involved in this. So this, you wouldn't be protecting athletes' rights because these weren't true athletes. So how does your initiative fall on this particular case?
Well, I'll say that, yeah, we're not involved in any way with the Varsity Blues case, but I think that it represents a few things that are concerning from a college sports standpoint, and particularly as it affects college athletes. Number one is that, first, there's a recognition that there's a lot of privilege. There's a lot of privilege not only in our country, but in colleges and universities. And these individuals allegedly were taking advantage of that privilege to the exclusion of a lot of people that simply don't have that access or those resources. And that's an important theme that applies directly to college sports and college athletes. A majority of college athletes, full scholarship college athletes, live below the poverty line. And also, a majority of men's basketball and football players, which largely generate the revenue that makes college sports possible, they are largely from underprivileged backgrounds and of people of color. And so there's a lot of people that don't have that access that is at issue here in the Varsity Blues case. But also, the sports connection comes in when you talk about academic standards, that there are academic standards that are given of a lesser nature, that there's that athletes are given access to admissions that other students might not be able to. Some people might see that as a privilege, but ultimately what you see is happening is that the schools are using the athletes for their athletic ability, and they're not actually educating them. And so They're bringing in students that may not have the academic qualifications that would otherwise be necessary, and therefore they're taking advantage of their athletic skill without actually giving them the education that they need to succeed in school and in life after sports.
So those student athletes are often called special admits. So if you take away a scholarship and give it to a kid who's not really a tennis player or a rower or whatever sport they are supposed to be good at, and that's a scholarship that could have gone to an underprivileged kid who really is good in that sport. Is that the bottom line?
I don't know if it's the bottom line, but that's certainly a point that applies here. Yes, that there are a limited number of scholarships that schools are able to provide under NCAA rules, and that if you're taking that money and you're affording it to somebody who otherwise doesn't deserve it, maybe because they're either not an athlete to begin with, or they simply don't have the athletic skill that would otherwise be required to participate on the varsity team, then yeah, you're taking an opportunity away of somebody that from someone who otherwise would be able to earn that.
All right, so some listeners might wonder why the special focus on Southern Cal. Well, there are a couple of reasons. Number one, the new president at Southern Cal is the former chancellor at UNC Chapel Hill. So she has walked into what some might call a hornet's nest, but and at Southern Cal before she arrived, and at other places, you hear the cry from administrators, "We didn't know. How could we have known that the tennis coach or the rowing coach or the soccer coach was taking bribes to let these students, in as athletes when they weren't athletes?" Isn't that what they're in the business of knowing? Administrators?
Yes, I mean, I do think that a school needs to be responsible for who it is that they're recruiting and whether those individuals actually have the athletic skills and qualifications to participate as a college athlete at a high level Division I institution. Yeah, I think that there's an element of that. Now, at the same time, there should be checks and balances in place to make sure that financial aid is being spent appropriately on those individuals that earn it. At the same time, if you have individuals that are going out of their way to avoid detection, yeah, there are problems with that. There are times where individuals will pursue their own selfish interests, and it may come back to harm an institution, as it may very well here, as it has, just in terms of reputation, at least so far.
Yeah, I want to bring up, I do want to talk mostly about USC, but I want to bring up the men's tennis coach at Texas, Michael Center. And Texas says, there was no way we could have anticipated this. No one would have ever conceived of the possibility of a coach taking a bribe. It's like, do you know people? who knows what people will do for money? So, is that part of the overall issue, if you will, with sports? It is such a big business.
Well, absolutely. I mean, the big business of college sports influences so much of what happens at a university, even outside of the athletic department. And so I'm not familiar with the exact details of the Texas case. And like I said, if an individual wants to avoid detection, there are ways to do that. However, at the same time, given the nature of the transactions, to the extent that they were recruiting individuals that otherwise didn't qualify either academically or athletically, there are ways to track on that and to understand who it is that you're admitting as an institution and who it is that you're including on your rosters as an athletic department. But that's a general statement that I say without knowing the details of the exact nature of the case at Texas.
Sports Focus. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Sports Focus with Charlie Tuggle. And now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sports Focus. We're talking with Tim Nevius of the College Athlete Advocacy Initiative. We're talking primarily about Varsity Blues and the University of Southern California. I want to, Tim, take just a brief dive into an article that came out by Forbes. And this Varsity Blues is being called the college admissions scandal. This writer says USC was no innocent victim. Like, the coach was doing this, we had no idea. So they even mentioned Harvard giving special treatment to relatives of wealthy donors. Well, that's not uncommon. I mean, that's, everybody knows that big time donors probably get a little bit of inside baseball kind of stuff and special treatment of their kids. But what makes this different is kids posing or parents posing their kids as athletes. That's the part that I think we haven't seen before.
Yeah, and I think you're right that any time that you have money, there is going to be favorable access granted to those that have the money. It goes back to my original point related to privilege and access. And I think that, the tie into sports is really just an avenue that they found as another way to admit these students under some different qualifications that otherwise they may not have been admitted to the school. So certainly there's favorable treatment here. I think how this relates to the bigger picture of college sports, and I hope that people keep this in mind, is that you can see that parents are seeking to admit their children to schools, not because of the degree of education that they're going to get, but to be affiliated with a particular brand. And those brands have been finely tuned and curated over time through athletics. They often say that athletics is the front porch of the university because it's the most visible aspect of the university, and it's what everyone sees. It's what everyone sees when you tune in on Saturday afternoon to watch college football. They see it throughout basketball season and attending all the other sports as well. And so it's notable to illustrate that college athletes are the ones that are being used by the universities as the vehicles for their marketing of the school. And that in itself is exploitation. And that is something that is highly concerning and that we at the College Athlete Advocacy Initiative are particularly in tune with.
All right. So does the initiative, or are you coming down on the side of athletes should be paid?
There are a variety of benefits that should be afforded to athletes. Yes, that at its very basic concept, athletes are workers. College athletes are workers, and they should be afforded the appropriate level of compensation and protections, just like everyone else in this country. Now, what I'll say is that it's everyone always wants to talk about whether the athletes should be paid, and there is a big argument as to why they should be paid, paid particularly because this is a $14 billion industry. But our initiative, the College Athlete Advocacy Initiative at the Urban Justice Center, goes far beyond just paying the players. There are simply fundamental rights that should be afforded to college athletes, including simply the right to have representation. They don't have guaranteed representation when it comes to, for instance, scholarship appeals. Many schools actually exclude counsel, legal counsel, from being present for hearings that determine whether or not the athlete's going to continue with their scholarship or not. They also need representation beyond that to fight, for instance, for increased medical care and benefits, including those benefits that are now starting to be provided to them for post-eligibility injuries that are a result of something they suffered while in school. And then it comes down to other fundamental rights, such as the name, image, and likeness. Name, image, and likeness bill in California was just passed last night and is now on its way to Governor Newsom's office. That should absolutely be signed into law and put pressure on the NCAA to recognize that these are fundamental economic rights that apply to everyone else in this country, except for college athletes.
So are you saying that you believe that should pass, or that you believe Newsom is actually going to sign it?
Well, I absolutely believe that it should pass, yes, and that it should be enacted into law. In terms of Governor Newsom signing it, I have a reasonable degree of certainty, or I should say reasonable degree of confidence, that he will sign that bill. And that's not knowing, you know, Governor Newsom or, you know, what his stance is on this particular bill, but seeing that his state legislature passed this almost unanimously to get to send it to his office, that's both Republicans and Democrats. And given the climate in other states and even at the national level, in which lawmakers from both sides of the aisle at state and federal offices have supported legislation of this type, I think that there's that's why I have some degree of confidence that Governor Newsom's going to sign this into law.
Sports Focus, we'll be right back.
You're listening to Sports Focus with Charlie Tuggle. And now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sports Focus and our discussion with Tim Nevius of the College Athlete Advocacy Initiative about all things athletics. But Tim, let's turn back to Southern Cal again. We're talking about this bill in California. We're talking about issues at Southern Cal, one of the preeminent sports programs in the country. And it's not just the Varsity Blue stuff. It's that they've just gotten rid of, or he resigned, athletics director Lynn Swann. You talk about using current athletes. I think often former athletes are used to be a face or a fundraiser or something like that. And maybe Swann's detractors would say he wasn't up to the job of running a multi-million dollar sports operation. Why are we seeing so much stuff coming out of Southern Cal?
you know, I can't speak to that point that, you know, every institution has its own internal issues. The circumstances of, you know, Mr. Swan's departure are beyond me. I don't have, you know, knowledge of that. There's obviously plenty of speculation in line with what you just said. But what I will tell you is that people need to understand that being an athletics director is a lot like being a CEO, that this is a $14 billion industry. And the individuals that are responsible for operating the athletics budget are tasked with, you know, essentially a budget of hundreds of millions of dollars. And that is a complex job that extends to, that requires skills beyond just the ability to raise funds. And again, I won't speak to any individual scenarios, and this isn't particular to Lynn Swan, but it is something that illustrates that this is big business. This isn't just extracurricular activities. Despite what the NCAA will have you believe, these athletes are highly tuned individuals being used to win games and earn money. And to manage that, you have to have a particular set of skills, I think. And those that don't are quickly shown the door.
At Southern Cal, you know, under his watch is when the Varsity Blues stuff happened. So you have to think there's some correlation there. And I want to go back to Carol Folt, who was chancellor here for a while. And from my own personal experience with her, no nonsense, a small package, but, you know, dynamite comes in small packages. So I can see her, you know, turning things over on their head at Southern Cal. So maybe one could hope, one who believes as you do that the athletics machine runs the university, that maybe this is an example of can we turn this corner at all? Maybe Southern Cal gives us hope that that can happen.
I wouldn't be so sure. I'll say it that way. I mean, I think that anytime you have an issue that is in the public eye that reflects poorly on the university or, you know, any other business, you often look for somebody to pin it on. And that very well may have been the case here. I think it's more likely that they're making changes to, you know, return some confidence, level of confidence in the university from the public. But whether that means that they're, you know, disrupting things in a way to make sure that academics take priority over athletics, I wouldn't be so certain. And that's, I say that just having worked in this industry for over 10 years or more, having worked at the NCAA for five of those years, knowing that in my experience, what I've seen is that many times universities and the leaders of college sports, they make decisions primarily based on their ability to win games and make money. And secondarily, those decisions relate to the academic success of their students and of the college athletes.
So is that what led you to leave the NCAA?
I left the NCAA after 5 years of working in the enforcement staff and seeing a lot of stuff as an investigator that definitely contributed to my sense of what was happening in college sports. And after that, I joined a firm here, Winston and Strawn, here in New York, and helped lead a federal lawsuit against the NCAA and the conferences on behalf of the players to challenge the compensation restrictions. That ended up being what's known as the Alston case, pending before the Ninth Circuit right now. And as a result of going through, you know, being on both sides, being first a college athlete myself at the University of Dayton where I played baseball, and then working at the NCAA and then leaving and suing the NCAA, I've learned a whole lot about how this business works. And I will tell you that, yes, as a result of that experience, that's what's brought me to this point where I feel the need to stand up for the college athletes and fight for what I think is just fundamental fairness in this massive $14 billion industry in which the athletes are just used and exploited.
All right. So perhaps Varsity Blues will wake up the public at least to say something's wrong and we have to try to change it. That does it for this edition of Sports Focus. Thanks to our guest, Tim Nevius. Also, thanks to engineer Gary Kirk. And as always, thanks to you for listening. Cheers.
Thanks to Richard Southall, Mark Nagel, and Deborah Southall at the College Sport Research Institute at the University of South Carolina for their research and guidance and for access to CSRI's international network of sources. Sports Focus is a service of UNC School of Media and Journalism.